At Firehouse Subs, a portion of every purchase helps provide life-saving equipment to first responders. We make our subs differently because our subs can make a difference. Like our fan-favorite turkey bacon ranch, piled high with tender smoked turkey breast, crispy bacon, melted sharp cheddar cheese, and drizzled with creamy peppercorn ranch. And it's only at Firehouse Subs. Click the banner now to start your pickup or delivery order.
Switch to Spectrum Mobile and get unlimited data for only $29.99 per month each when you get two or more lines. You could save hundreds on your mobile bill. Plus, there are no added taxes, hidden fees, and no contracts. Click to try the Spectrum Mobile Savings Calculator, and in three easy steps, you'll see how much you could save. Visit SpectrumMobile.com/save. Offer valid for new customers on two or more unlimited lines. Spectrum Internet required. Restrictions apply. Visit SpectrumMobile.com for details.
All right, welcome to the Browns Wire Podcast. It's your host, Josh Keeley. With me, as always, Donovan James. And today we have a very special guest coming in from the OBR, Jake Burns. Jake, how you doing, brother?
Good, good. Thanks for having me, guys. I'm excited.
Yeah, we've been hitting, I've been harassing you on Twitter. We've been Twitter followers for a while, and we'll finally get you on the show. It'll be a good time, and it's perfect timing. Perfect timing with the second biggest headline so far this offseason for the Browns, with so much hype going into the J.J. Watt BS, and finally he signs, and it's with the Arizona Cardinals. You're judging from your Twitter, you took it pretty well.
I mean, look, I didn't care if they signed J.J. Watt or not. Like, I think that there's elements to J.J.'s game that can be beneficial, but it's like he's also a big-time risk liability. Three of the last 5 years he's had injury issues, and like, he's not an ideal 4-3 guy. He's better set as a 3-4 guy, and that's, you know, I mean, he chose Arizona, and there's reasons why. I mean, you could point small reasons, weather. You could point big reasons, you know, 3-4 defense a little better for his skill set, you know, links to Vance Joseph. But the biggest reason is they probably did bid the most. You know, my point with the whole thing was, like, I think the Browns made a really strong push, and I think that's okay if they did. Like, okay, maybe Arizona bid 15, but if the Browns bid 12 or 13, which I've had reasons to believe they got to that number, they made a really strong push. It's not actually that crazy to think that the guy in Arizona was actually told – something realistic. What does J.J. Watt have to gain at this point? There's nothing to be gained by leaking this information. Like, I think the guy just said, hey, man, we had a couple offers that were a little bit more money, but he chose Arizona, and the reasons are pretty obvious. So, like, if you want to get offended because J.J. didn't sign with the Browns and, like, go down this avenue of, you know, I'm pissed he didn't sign him, but I'm happy my front office put their foot down. But if they would have gone to 15, you would have been praising them like crazy. Like, it's just this double stand. I get it. He didn't sign with your team. Doesn't mean the Browns aren't worthy. He just chose someone else. So there's plenty of other great options out there. I'm sure we'll talk about them, but, like, it's just weird. It's just like these people that follow every single little thing that J.J. Watt said or did leading up to this. And then it's like, well, they made a strong push, but they underbid by $2 million. And all of a sudden it's like, yeah, great job by the GM not to give them that $2 million. Well, I guarantee if the Cardinals come here in week 17 and J.J. Watt has 4 sacks, it's going to be like, well, why didn't we pay him? It's like, it's just this weird thing, man, where you want to feel like the Browns always make the right decision. Okay, they made an aggressive push for this guy. That's great. They made a good offer for him. He didn't come here. It's okay. Then move on. There's good players still out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Donovan, actually, last week, Donovan and I actually went through our top 10 edge rushers, free agent-wise. And it's a pretty deep class. I think that they are going to find someone, like you said. When it comes to free agency, you can only control what you can control. It's not like the draft where the Browns, you get to make all the call. It's a 50-50 game. It takes two to tango. So sometimes it's just not a good mesh. Whatever J.J. Watt didn't see here, whether it was money or the situation, you can't really blame him. You do deal with some of the Cleveland bias where, for some reason, there's this aura that people think that we're so much closer to the big game than the Arizona Cardinals. And I don't necessarily feel like that's true either. You know,
I'm not trying to be like a downer, but you look at the Cardinals and they have a really good young quarterback who's had a really good first 2 years. They have a better defense, a far superior defense to Cleveland right now.
Yep.
And they played a tough division without the soft out of conference schedule that the Browns received. Like, everybody who played the NFC or NFC East thrived. Like, it's just a fact. It's okay, though. Like, the Browns are in a good position to make a playoff run. They can still be good. But Arizona also has really good pieces to be in position to make their own playoff run. So sitting here being like, well, he didn't want to sign with a contender. Okay, he did, though. So what do you – just because you have a lousy opinion of the Cardinals that isn't really based and rooted in realism. Hey. Like, come on, man. Like,
I love this guy, Jake. Right here. I like this guy.
They're one game away from making the playoffs. Like, everybody makes jumps in the NFL. Like, non-playoff teams that were right there make jumps to the next level. So listen, again, like, the Browns are still going to have a chance to be really good, but it's not linear. Ask the 2008 Browns if they thought they were going to be good after 2007. Yeah. The 2003 Browns if they thought they were going to be good after 2002. Yeah. Like, we want to believe it's going to happen, and we don't have a reason to think otherwise.
Right.
But it's like, We've seen weird things happen all the time, and the Browns can end up not have a good year and go 8-8. You just the injuries, the schedule not meshing at the perfect time when you're playing somebody. It's NFL is so weird, man. So don't act like the Cardinals are this far team that's so much further away than the Browns to getting to the ultimate goal. Like, I just think that's like you're wearing your orange and brown sunglasses, and you're just kind of bitter that he didn't sign with Cleveland. So that's where I'm at with it.
I agree with that. You know, I do believe that the Browns are close, right? I'm trying to be positive about it. But for all the people you hear say, hey, they're a couple guys away. They're also a couple guys away from being a very average team again, too. It goes both ways. So I'm definitely there with you. Now, Donovan's on the other end of the spectrum. Donovan loves Cliff Kingsbury so much that he's just biased. I just can't take your opinion seriously.
That's why. Well, I love Kyler too, Coach Handsome Kyler.
You do.
I love
you
it.
Do. It's bad.
They're building something up in the desert, man. I was saying, I didn't know they would do this, but D-Hop, you know, I love D-Hop. Who doesn't love D-Hop? Of
course. Yeah, man. I thought the deal made a ton of sense for them. And JJ picked the T's defense. Yeah, the defense is in far better position. Like, okay, if I'm sitting down looking at this thing and I'm like, okay, all right, I got a defense here in Cleveland that has Myles Garrett. That dude's really good. But who else do they have? They have Denzel Ward. They're about eight guys away from being really good defensively. While I could go here for 2 years. They could go here for 2 years, and I like the money, but they also have a defense that's structured the right way. They got a bunch of young, good pieces, good safety, good corners. They got a really good edge player, outside linebacker opposite me. Like, I just think it's rather easy to make that decision for him. So, again, that's one name taken away, and the Cardinals are no longer suitors for any of these other names, and it eliminates team. And you got, like, you know, Yannick Ngakoue is still out there. You got Trey Hendrickson. You got – yeah, there's a bevy of names, man. We could talk about them all day. But, yeah, like, the Cardinals are in good position. I expect them to have a good year. I think the 49ers are still kind of on the rocks. Seattle might trade Russell Wilson. That division's open, man. Like, and they could definitely make a jump.
Yeah, and let's go ahead and let's talk about some of those additional options. You already named a couple free agents who I really like. Unique Ngakoue kind of got that's a good option that I really like. And I see a Browns fans, a lot of people on Twitter kind of crapping all over him. I think he was a little bit of a disappointment at Minnesota, but he was never that flashy, explosive pass rusher. He was just a very solid do-it-all defensive end, which I think would be a perfect compliment to Myles Garrett, especially if you talk about that second tier. You know, you're not going to want to – ideally, you don't want to spend that J.J. Watt money anyways. You're wanting to get someone in the second tier like Unique there. But what are some other options there you see in free agency that could be possible Cleveland Browns?
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to somebody that they can get maybe unexpected that's a little bit below value. And, like, Yannick could get lost in that shuffle a little bit. I think he's a name that you got to understand. Some of these teams are chasing a premier guy, like making somebody like Yannick or Trey the premier guy, where Cleveland has the ability to make one of these guys just the secondary feature guy who's going to, if you're looking at the contract and you're like, okay, I could go say to Detroit, or I could go somewhere. I'm just thinking off the top of my head, or even Houston. Now I could go to Houston. They're offering me a good contract, but I'm going to draw a ton of attention. Well, if I go to Cleveland, I'm always working opposite Miles. So unless they're keeping two tight ends in all the time, I'm going to get free reign against this opposite tackle, like 90% of the game. So, like, there's little things like that we don't think about when we're talking about free. I think that's a big part of it. So yeah, like Trey Hendrickson in New Orleans, like, the premier guy for me. He's young. He's got a connection to somebody on the Browns roster in that Florida Atlantic connection to Harrison Bryant. Like, he's got 4 good years. He obviously didn't get the early snaps in the league because they were trying to spend their time developing Marcus Davenport, who they spent a first round pick on opposite, Cameron Jordan. So like, They gave him a chance. He's still young. I think he's going to play this year at 26. Had a really nice sack production season last year. Has a good power speed mix. A lot of the same stuff. He would be great number two guy. And then there's like Okorah with the Lions can be a productive cheap player. I think that a guy like Jadeveon Clowney, who didn't even develop a market last year, didn't have a good year in Tennessee, but could be hungry to take a 1 year deal in this weird salary cap situation and be hungry to go get a double digit sack season to go parlay his next contract. You could take advantage of that sort of thing. So I think there are realistic options out there still that can be effective. I mean, I don't think Carl Lawson hits free. Everything I gather from people that operate around the Bengals, he's either going to be tagged or signed to some sort of extension. I don't pay much attention to him because I just think that would be completely asinine for them to let him walk away for nothing. So I think those three bigger options, there's other names out there, like I said, that they could entertain. But if you're looking for like guys that are going to make Browns fans' ears pop up, Hendrickson and Ngakoue are guys, like Clowney could be a guy too. So, but again, they can't spend everywhere. So they're either going to commit to spending some money and on the pass rush side of things, I think, and this is a conversation I've had on several different podcasts now, is the status quo of their defensive line is not good. I mean, it's okay. Let me put it this way. Miles, Andrew Billings coming back, Sheldon Richardson, he's a candidate for some things I think are silly to cut him. I just think you're creating a whole other weakness for no reason whatsoever. Agreed. I think you can try to restructure him, but you only have one more year to deal with that contract. But nonetheless, that's a different conversation. But you have Billings and Richardson, and then you have Adrian Claiborne and like Porter Gustin. So that's not an A-plus defensive line, but as we saw at the end of the year, it can still be functionable. Their coverage is a disaster, guys. Like, they have Denzel Ward and they have Ronnie Harrison. That's it. I mean, like, everybody else is essentially gone. Carl Joseph, Anderson Dejo are gone, and those guys weren't bringing a ton last year. Terrence Mitchell's floating on the free agency market, solid player, but never anything above reaching average. Greedy Williams' shoulder's a disaster. Grant Delpit, all of a sudden, people seem to think that he can just make a miracle, seamless recovery from one of the worst injuries in football. So, like, they have two guys that are really, really ready to play next year in the secondary. And I think that you look at that, like, I keep calling their coverage situation's a disaster. These are routes to fixing it. But, like, if you're looking at the coverage versus the front, the coverage is a disaster. So I'd rather allocate some more of my funds there so I'm not playing 4 first- or second-year players in my secondary. Like, I don't want to do that. Like, I just think you got to find ways to – whether you go and get Marcus Williams or you try to trade for Lattimore, you go get Anthony Harris. There's something there that has to be done that doesn't involve cutting Sheldon Richardson. Like, I think that's just silly.
I agree with you, too. And it's funny. We did the rankings of our top – Browns needs, and I completely agree with you, is that the defensive backfield needs to be priority number one. You know, one of our fan questions last week was talking about Grant Delpit, what to expect from Grant Delpit, or, you know, do you count him as a lock? And I think that is crazy that so many Browns fans are just automatically assuming that he's going to be able to step in, play at a high level. I hope he can, just like I hope Greedy can, but it's best to prepare for what you know, and we know that he hasn't been on the field. So if you can get a guy like Mooring from TCU, if he's there at number 26, that might not be a bad place to look, which I guess brings us to our next question. I saw your recent mock drafts. I was a big fan of them. I think I liked the first one more than the second one. I like taking J.C. Horn over the defensive tackle Barrymore from Alabama. But what do you think? What do you envision for the Browns draft plan and what you think they need to do?
Well, I don't. This is a terrible answer, but so much is dependent on free agency, because they brought in like 8 guys last year that changed the complete outlook of the draft. Like, we all thought that they would go tackle early, but they solved one of the tackles, so it was like, okay, maybe they'll go to tight end in the second. Well, they solved tight end. It's just like all of these things shift, and they're going to shift. But there's no doubt about, in my opinion, that you can kind of shoehorn 2 positions in. And I don't think people are wrong. I think you can certainly say they're going to look at an edge rusher, unless they go sign somebody big, an edge rusher or a corner. There are two guys that I would consider other than those guys. Let me take that back. There are three guys I would consider outside of those positions. And I'm eliminating wide receiver because that's just a whole other abyss you can fall into. I even just wrote on the scenarios there, but it's just like this black hole of disaster right now. But like the three guys I would consider from a 26, and there's not a cornerback that is presented there that I like, or there is no longer an edge player there that I like, is Trevon Merrick, who you mentioned earlier, the safety from TCU, who I think is a fine, very fine football player, fills a center fielder type cover three single high safety role, but also a guy who can play man coverage, yes, can come down, play the line of scrimmage, takes great angles on tackles, plays the ball really fluidly when it arrives without disrupting the catch point in terms of drawing penalties. I really like his game. Barrymore, who you just mentioned, Christian Barrymore, the interior, who I think is substantially the best defensive interior player in this draft. I think really? He's a very good football player. I would consider him now. This is like if they let Sheldon go, if they end up letting Sheldon go and taking that $12 million mm-hmm. and readjusting that $12 million into safety or corner or end, then it becomes a need. Now, if he's there, I'd consider it. But if the status quo is unchanged, where they keep Sheldon and they keep Billings and maybe they go sign another guy to go with Elliott in the second rotation, maybe not. But I would consider it. That's what I'm saying in terms of like that situation. The only other guy I would consider is Coromo, the linebacker hybrid guy. I call him a rover. He played rover at Notre Dame. If he's sitting there, he's the only linebacker I would consider. I don't, like I said, again, I don't consider him a linebacker. He doesn't do traditional linebacker things. So that's why I would like him. People name that role a bunch of different things in their defense. I've seen it named a Viper when I was playing football in high school. They called it a monster. People call it a rover. There's a whole bunch of different names for that. But it's just a guy who is a diverse player in terms of he can play against heavy personnel sets, multiple tight ends, fullbacks, whatever, but can also be put in the slot, can play hook, curl, flat zone coverages, can fill an alley in the run game from depth, and can also play man-to-man on certain players that they feel comfortable with. He can do all of that. I recently saw in The Ringer that they compared him to Jamal Adams. That might be a bit of a reach for me, but when you see a hyper-talented player, you relate him to a hyper-talented current NFL player, and he does some things similar, especially the play speed, the twitchiness, and some of the roles that he can fill to Jamal Adams. So, like, if they're taking a linebacker there, or they're just interested, like, who's the best football player on the board right here? He makes sense to me because he can fill a really interesting role, especially against the division that has – you know, a ton of lateral run game between Baltimore and Lamar Jackson and a whole bunch of different things they do lateral run game wise. Matt Canada's taking over the offensive coordinator role for Pittsburgh. And, you know, we know his, if you remember his ridiculous offense at Maryland, that was just fly sweep, jet sweep, fake action, just a bunch of different stuff. You'll need guys who can cover ground laterally. And obviously, you know, if you get to the upper echelon of the conference, you play Buffalo with a ton of speed. You play Kansas City with the speed that the NFL, every team wants that speed. So you got to have guys that can do different things. So those are the three guys I would probably consider. I still think above all else, they go edge or corner. And if none of those three guys are there, they'll probably consider trading back. So like, that's kind of where I'm at with this current pick 26 setup. Now everything could change if we talk in a month. That's just how it is, though.
Yeah, and I'm kind of the same way. I haven't made my big board yet or anything like that, but Donovan and I did a little exercise a couple weeks ago, and I took Coromara for the Browns as well. You know, people get real turned. We got a couple nasty comments. We got a couple mean comments in, why are you taking a linebacker? Why are you taking a linebacker? Why are you taking a linebacker? Because when you Google them, it pops up like that. I'm sorry, Donovan, you had something?
No, I was going to say, like, I mean, everyone's saying that to you, but when we had Mac Robinson on the show, and, I mean – myself, like, Zaven Collins was like my pick for the Browns personally. So I was gonna ask Jake what he thought, because I mean, if Mac was on this show, he talked about Zaven Collins for like 20 minutes.
Going oh, yeah, Browns. He was pitching a tent for sure.
He was like, that has to be the pick if he's there, like, there's no other option, like, type of thing. So,
I'm not gonna say he's a bad football, I'm not trying to say that in any stretch. I think he's a good football player, he's one of the best linebackers in the country last year. Like, if they picked him, I'd be like, cool, they can find a role for this guy, no problem, he's gonna be a player. Yeah. The problem is kind of like it's a slippery slope, because we have all of these people who think they know everything that Andrew Berry thinks and does, and Paul DePodesta, and they've seen this sheet of paper that has these outlines and these rules, and maybe it came from DePodesta, maybe it didn't. I don't know. It's been floating around Twitter forever, but like, it has these outlines, and like, they watched Joe Schobert leave last year, and they're like, well, they'll never pay a linebacker. Well, we've seen Andrew Berry for 1 year. Maybe right. He will if the right guy's available. But for now, we don't have that evidence. We have we have them going cheap at linebacker, and we don't believe, much like the rest of the NFL is getting to that opinion too, guys. We're like the linebacker side of kind of the running back of the defense. I'm not telling you guys anything you haven't heard, but you know, you can watch Tampa Bay and watch how Levante David played and White and be like Devin White and be like, okay, that's a route too. Like, yeah. There's no perfect formula. Sometimes good running backs are really fun to have on your team too. Like, I get that for the majority of the NFL, it's not that way, but there are some guys who are transcendent players, so it doesn't matter. Like, you just take them and the talent works. So Coromoa is a guy that I'm interested in because he can do a lot of coverage things I think the Browns also need help with. I think Zaven Collins can be a nice pass rushing threat as well as a nice coverage linebacker as he was this past year. I don't expect them to take him, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you that guy can't play because I think he can play. And if they took him, I'd be like, okay, man, hell yeah, they got a pretty good young linebacker here that I feel good about. So, you know, I think that a lot of what I try to do is just like looking at the evidence that they have and saying, this is what I think they'll do. But just because I think they'll do something doesn't mean I think a guy's not good enough or qualified enough or can't play. Like I said, they could buck the trend and take him and be like, and we would say, okay, I would, there would be people who would complain, but whatever, I'd be fine with it because I think he's a good football player. So I'm not going to pitch for anybody. I think that there are plenty, let's put it this way. We haven't seen the Browns pick 26 in a long time. Is a completely new endeavor where we're going to watch all these people go off the board. But there are still, I just feel like there's still going to be some good players there at 26. I like where they're at based on what they need. But again, just kind of back to our sentiment a minute ago, which is they could sign Levante David or some linebacker that maybe we aren't expecting. And that changes the entire linebacker outlook. So it could all change. You know, I think that we need more evidence from this front office about what they believe, players they prioritize, positions they truly prioritize, before we really, really get kind of like sticklers about what their philosophical angle is for positional value and things like that. So that part of it's exciting for me, is seeing where they go. Like, you know, people wouldn't think that they would spend big money on a defensive end opposite Miles because they have a lot invested in Miles. Well, they proved otherwise. They were aggressive in going after Watt. So, like, they're going to be aggressive improving the defense. That, to me, is great. And there's a lot of really good options out there to improve this defense. They need one position offensively, which is a wide receiver, also a deep position. So exciting that they can maybe get a guy in that role too. So, they could take one of these linebackers. Man, I don't even remember what the original question was. I'm out in the weeds right now just talking. But, like, I think that there are really good players at 26 that they could pick. But if they even traded down, there's some really fun names in the 30s that they could end up with too.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think you summed up very eloquently when you said if he's transcendent. The problem is there's a section of Twitter when you're there, everybody wants to put the square in the square hole, or, you know, the square space, the peg, make everything fit like a puzzle. Sometimes it's not like that. You know, we talk about Andrew Berry and give him a lot of credit for being the statistical analytical genius, and same with Kevin Stefanski. And that's true. But these guys are still running a football team. There's a lot of things that we don't know. You know, if you can get a guy like Coromoa, don't look at the fact that it says OLB next to his name. Look at what he can do, what he allows you to do as far as coverages go. You know, Zaven Collins was guarding running, was, you know, covering running backs. Now, granted, it was against Tulane, but still, what that player is capable of, rather than just the position they're going to be spotted at in your Madden game. But you brought up a great point. We'll talk about some options at number, you know, 30 and later on. Who are some of your targets? I know you had a couple defensive ends that you had in your mock draft. Joe Tryon from Washington, I thought that was a great pick in your mock draft. Guy who sat out this past year, has some explosive ability. Again, the defensive end from Duke, Victor Dimitri Cage.
Dimitri, right?
Dimitri Cage. That's another guy who got double teamed basically virtually every play, and I appreciate that as well. I was one of those guys that liked Marcus Davenport for a lot of the same reason. Like, when people look, if you look at a guy like the dude from Penn State and you look at his production numbers, well, he didn't take the kind of double teams that Victor did at Duke, right? So there's kind of an excuse for maybe a dip in not as much production as you'd like. So I really like those two guys that you highlighted. Are there anybody else that we should watch out for that maybe you're a big fan of?
Yeah, I like Davion Nixon a lot. I think if they're going to look to improve their interior defensive line situation away from the first round, he was the Big Ten Player of the Year out of Iowa. Very, very, very strong at the point of attack. I think he's got a nice set of moves. He's great. in terms of gap-to-gap coverage. And I like how he uses his hands in point-of-contact situations too. So he's a nice defensive tackle option that's out there. You mentioned Joe Tryon. I've seen Joe Tryon mocked as high up as the first round. It's just such a weird year in terms of you just don't know what these front offices evaluate and kind of how they value everybody. But as far as safeties go, Darius Washington is another nice safety out of TCU, played alongside Merrick there. I think he's got some nice slot flexibility, so I think he's a guy to keep your eye on. Same too with Holland, the kid out of Oregon. I think he's going to be a nice safety at the NFL level. There's a ton of really good value safeties. Hampson Nasruddin, the Florida State kid, is really good. Corners in the second round that I like. Kelvin Joseph, the Kentucky kid, I think is an interesting prospect. Size, length, twitchiness. I think Afedi Melifonwu, the kid from Syracuse, who people probably remember, his brother, who played in the league for a while there, was drafted by Dallas.
Nice simple name, Obi.
That's right. A 6'3", 215, very rangy, just a long body type that they might really be interested in. That definitely interests me. And then, like, wide receivers, there's a ton of guys that could be in that value range for them. It's hard to even peg down. Like, you know, I one of the drafts in the second round, Terrence Marshall from LSU fell. I was like, yeah, it'd be hard to pass on him. Tutu Atwell, the kid out of Louisville, is a fun speed guy if they're looking speed. In terms of guys that could really come in and be difference makers, if you get to the second round, pick 59, and either of the Moores are still on the board, Elijah from Ole Miss, who had the most receiving yards through eight games of an SEC season in history last year. He's a nice, very fluid inside-outside prospect. Rondale Moore, we all know him from Purdue and what he did to Ohio State a few years ago. Another really fun player. There's guys like I said, a wide receiver who will be Diami Brown, the kid from North Carolina, is another interesting prospect. It goes on and on. I think what's good is that the positions they need seem to have some really nice depth. And I would say, too, the kid from – I can't think of the name – Ellerson Smith, who's a Northern Iowa defensive end prospect who had a really nice Senior Bowl. I could probably take the next 30 minutes talking about some fun prospects. I'll eventually put this into writing, but I don't know. It's been so long since the Browns have had a team where it's like, okay, they need to really peg down these like four positions, and then they're in really good shape because they have so many things set on the roster. And I just keep looking at, I should say Aleem McNeil is another good defensive tackle prospect if they get into the later rounds. The kid too, I was just talking about the other day. You want to talk about a tough name to say? I'm trying to pull it up in front of me. His first name's Levi. He's out of Washington. He's another fun prospect. Ozanawake or something. I don't know. You guys can come back.
That's damn close. Donovan, you probably know it. No, you're the West Coast guy.
That's. I was gonna say Ozanawake too. Like kind of. Yeah. We're missing an extra vowel though.
We probably are, man. Yeah. I'm not taking any blame if that name went wrong, so don't hold it over my head. But listen, they're like there's edge players that are of value in the mid rounds. There are definitely corners that I really like. Shakur Brown, another kid out of Michigan State, I think is a fun player. The list goes on, but the safety corner and defensive line positions have a nice collection of prospects there for them. So I feel really good about their chance to come out of this thing like saying, hey, we really need to focus on defense. And I think that there's a clear plan to do that and maybe sprinkle in a wide receiver here or there. And you have a nice potential setup going into 2021 and beyond, which is an exciting thing for Browns fans.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think with the Tryon pick, I keep harping back on it, but I just thought it was such an interesting pick, too, because I feel like it fits what we saw with the Browns last year with Jordan Elliott and Jacob Phillips. It's a guy who has first round. There's like for if he plays 10 plays in a row, three of them are going to be that's the best football player in the world. Seven of them are going to be like, where do you go? Is he even on the field? So, and I feel like if you can get a guy like that in the second or third round, that really fits with the Browns, A, that can mark a steal, and B, that kind of fits what they were doing last year. Same thing with a guy like Sage Surratt, wide receiver out of Wake Forest, who sat out last year. I know he's not going to be going I know the NFL scouts are well aware of him, but you don't hear a lot of people talking about him. So you kind of hope that that hype allows him to fall. I mean, that's a guy that was in late first round conversation. But there's a lot of talent out there. They're very deep at a lot of places where I think the Browns, you know, like you said, the Browns' needs are very deep in the draft. You talked about Tutu Atwell. Did you check out his teammate, Des Fitzpatrick? Because that's another guy that I know he doesn't necessarily fit that deep speedster role that the Browns would be looking for. But he's a guy that I really, really liked, and he really flourished his freshman year with Lamar Jackson. And then, yeah, obviously, the quarterback situation there was not great, and Tutu Atwell was just pure speed. So Des Fitzpatrick, though, I think he could be a nice fit in Cleveland. Did you check him out at all?
Yeah. I think he's a fluid. I think he's got some fluidity to his game that I like. I think a lot of it will come down to his testing. I think if he tests pretty well, people will watch the film and they'll lend a lot of credit to the freshman year being like, okay, this is what this guy can do when he gets consistent quarterback play.
Yes.
Some concerns about route tree stuff there, but for the most part, I think he would be a nice mid late round guy that you could develop because, you know, I think they might have something with Donovan Peoples-Jones in terms of a guy who can eventually start for you. I don't know that he ever becomes a star by any stretch, but a guy who could maybe start down the road. So that's kind of what they're looking for in terms of somebody who can come in the late rounds and slowly develop. Like, they didn't have to rush Donovan for the most part last year. They put him in and said, hey, man, here's a pretty simplified route tree for you in situations we think you're going to get a clean break off the line of scrimmage, stuff like that. And he thrived. And I think that they'll continue to let him get in, ease him in those situations where he's most prepared to take advantage of what he does well. So that's a nice thing.
Yeah. And you know, the funny part about him too, is they kind of did throw him in there because his very first snap was due to OBJ being hurt. And then it was kind of like, okay, this is your job now, you know, cause he was kind of the only guy on the roster that fit that role there. And he played really well. Obviously he didn't get the receptions and the snaps you would see in some of the early round guys, but for a sixth rounder, it was pretty surprising. Now, again, the superstar quote was a little insane. I saw that as well. But again, we far surpassed anything you expect from a sixth rounder at this point, which I think is definitely a good thing. Are there any free agent wide receivers that you're looking at that you think that might be a good fit?
Well, I think that a guy that we've continued at the OBR to preach about and talk about, and the guy the Browns know well, is Rashad Perriman. I think it makes a ton of sense for both sides in terms of a guy who, hey, man, he's got a very specific role and he can fit it and he can run and he's got some, you know, easy camaraderie with Baker and Jarvis and the guys he's been around before. And I think he would certainly know his role and fit it. I think that names you probably don't hear a ton about, John Ross, a guy that can just flat run. Maybe he's looking for another opportunity. Again, if you bring back, and right now I have no reason to believe that the wide receiver room won't be what it is. The only guy that you can look at and say, okay, he might not be here, is Rashard Higgins. So, okay, I think that it's pretty common sense based to look at Rashard Higgins and Jarvis Landry and kind of Peoples-Jones and be like, those guys operate in a similar fashion, you know, like looking at, okay, let me put it this way. Between Higgins, Donovan Peoples-Jones, and Kadarius Hodge, I think they all operate the same route tree in this offense. So you have to make a choice. Do we have $4 to $6 million more to give Rashard Higgins? I don't know. You have OBJ and Landry, as it currently sits right now, making $30 million, the highest positional cap hit on the team. Like, that's a real issue. It's not an issue, but it is. So, like, if you want to go add Jarvis back in, or sorry, Higgins back in, and then go draft a wide receiver, it's like, okay, someone's got to go at that point. You can't have seven wide receivers on game day. So do they restructure Jarvis and Odell, maybe put some money forward, and label it as some signing bonus money to soften the cap hits and create $7 or $8 million to give some of that money to Higgins? That's probably the only way it'll happen. If they don't restructure those guys or move on from one of them, Higgins is probably not back. So, okay, you got Odell, you got Jarvis, you got Hodge, you got Peoples-Jones. That's four guys. You're adding a fifth guy. What other thing do you need? Well, we need a guy who's really adept at running deep routes. So, like, Rashad Perriman's a lid lifting type in this system. And like I said, John Ross can obviously really run. Maybe Chris Conley's another like low key free agent that's out there that they could be interested in. So when I'm looking at those, I mean, there's big names that if they moved on from Odell or Jarvis or did anything crazy, I mean, Curtis Samuel's a stud. He would be great in this offense. Allen Robinson's a stud, would be great in this offense. Kenny Galladay's a stud, would be great in this offense. Oh. Like, those guys are out there, but they're not realistic for the situation. So you got to look at what guys fit the role they need, and that's the guys I was just kind of referencing right there. And there are a ton of those guys in the draft too that can fit that role too. So, like, it's weird, man. Wide receivers got all these different outcomes where, you know, maybe Odell and Jarvis just have one more year here in Cleveland. Then they got to kind of like keep an eye on the future too. Like, how are you replacing those guys collectively? So that's something they have to be thinking about. Or they could, I wouldn't say shock us all, but they could really like push and accelerate this plan forward a little bit. And maybe, I don't know what Odell's trade value is. It's probably not great, but you could probably get a third or fourth pick, the round pick for him, and something else maybe sprinkled in. Because it's coming off the ACL. I don't think Jarvis is going to net you much in return.
I told you, Josh.
He was traded.
Jake, I
want to
ask you a question. I'm going to let you finish, Jake. Yeah, I'm going to ask you a question after. No, go ahead. Josh knows I'm going to ask you.
Like, in my opinion, Jarvis was traded for a third-round pick in 2016. Or, sorry, in 2017? I don't even know. My years are all confused. 2018 is Baker's rookie year he brought in. So, like, yeah. – He was traded for a third back then. He's 28 now. He's slower than even he was back then. He's beat up. He takes a physical pounding every year. He's got two more years of wear and tear. Is somebody trading a real asset for that guy? Like, I don't – if you trade it for him right now, you're getting back that $14 million contract too. And he's, like, paid like a top seven wide receiver in the league, and he doesn't produce. I like Jarvis. It's not like – I don't tear him down, but the facts are the facts here. And, like – I just don't know how they move on from either of those guys for anything of value. So then it's like, okay, the only thing, the only outcome there is you move on from them and you open up money to go get those guys, the Curtis Samuels of the world or whatever. So it's possible they could do that. I just think that that's a real risk, especially when you know you have to spend so much defensively to get where you want to. So I keep going back to they're going to run it back with those two wide receivers this year, and then we'll see what looks like maybe moving on from there after next year. So that's just kind of where I am. Ask away, my man. I didn't mean to linger on there.
No, you're good. I just – so what was it last week, Josh, that somebody had a fan question for me? And I liked it. I liked the trade for both teams. It was
terrible.
He hates it so much. It was Odell Beckham for Scotty Miller in a second round pick.
No, you said third. You said third, bro.
Third. Sorry. Yeah, it was third round pick.
Big difference. Big difference.
Yeah, Scotty Miller, you said it's 24,
23. He's young.
Scotty can run. I think that he would have a roster spot. Would he be a high value player in this offense? Not Tom Brady's offense, but this offense. Yeah, he would have a role, but he wouldn't be as valuable. Like, the pick is the thing for this situation. So I'm kind of on record as saying that I don't think they're going to get a first or second for Odell. I just don't. I think that, let me preface this. I love a lot about Odell Beckham. I think he's a better person than people lead on. I think he's got a more team-driven attitude than people lead on. But there is an element to him that is very hothead, and that's just who he is. Like, cool, like T.O. was that way. There's a lot of dudes that have been this way. He just is he expects a lot, and he's coming off a very serious knee injury. He's approaching 30 quickly. What asset are you giving up to bring in a $15 million player? Like, that's the thing too. It's not just the things about, is Odell going to be right again? It's he's also going to cost us $15 million. So if they got even a third, I think a third round pick is the max that I could see them getting. So if I was in the mood to trade Odell, this is not me. I don't want to face backlash from freaking Pete. I'm not saying trade him, but if they were in the mood to trade him, there's so many sensitive people about this. If they were in the mood to trade him, which I understand because there's undeniable data about Baker Mayfield being better without him, you can take that route wherever you want to take it, but the data is the data, and how they perceive it is information we don't know. They have information about that we don't know. There could be any number of things that they know about how Baker went about things differently, or it could be completely innocuous and just be like, throw your hands up. It just is what it is. So if they did trade him, that kind of trade, if you're getting back a young wide receiver who can really run and fill a niche and a third round pick, I would be inclined to say yes to that. That's just my opinion. That's just kind of where, if they were in the mood to do it, it would make sense. If you got a second for him from anybody with this wide receiver class, I would take it in a heartbeat. If you are in the mood to trade him, if you think Odell is going to come back and Baker is a different quarterback in the last two-thirds of last year, we believe he's more comfortable in this offense now because he's more comfortable, because he's better at processing what's going on in front of him. We think he turned the corner. We think he's taking the next steps. And I know we're going to talk about this in a minute, Josh, but you think he's taking the next steps, becoming this more comfortable player, this offense around him is more, and he's going to be better with Odell now because he knows where he's going with the football. He understands his role. We have a better rapport in terms of what we're calling for him and what he understands and how he sees the field. And we think we're going to see a better version of Baker and Odell combination. Cool. I'm with that too, man. Like, that could be a very plausible outcome. So there's a win-win on both sides of that, in my opinion.
That was the argument. That's where I'm at. I'm like Peter Griffin with the mystery box. I would rather open the mystery box of OBJ, and if he's Buffalo Bills OBJ, okay, I lost, but at least I tried. I didn't give up on him. You know what I mean? And I'm going to bank, hopefully he's that Cowboy. I'm hoping that it just was completely random, that at the time of the injury and the time everything fell apart, that Baker was just finding his groove, and that's why we see the perception that he was better without OBJ. Does that make sense? That's what my hope is.
I think you're right about. I talked to Jake Trotter about that, you know, a couple weeks ago, where the conversation is like, from the Browns' perspective, you're sitting at the round table. You have all the people of importance: AVP, Andrew Berry, all of them. Kevin Stefanski. All of them are sitting there, and they're saying, "Okay, we have this really big decision with Baker, and we're going to talk about Baker. Where's he at? Where'd he go? How'd he get better? How'd he go from the first 6 weeks being this quarterback that was borderline unplayable sometimes?" That's a bit rough. Who is not quite near where we thought he would be to the last half of the year, literally being a top three quarterback in the league almost, top five, comfortable saying top five. What took him there? How do we get him there? Okay, we believe X, Y, and Z got him there. Well, is that now something that we think can jive with Odell? Like, is that something we think can now he can make Odell and Baker can now make each other better? Because if not, if there's something about the way Baker plays and he's a very timing-based quarterback and he's a very, I don't give a shit who's on the other end of the read. I just want to make the right read and get the ball out. And I don't want to have to worry about someone chirping in my ear. And that's okay. I'm not knocking Odell. Like, good wide receivers, good running backs should want the football. Like, they should want it. Like, hey, man, get me the football. That's cool. But if some quarterbacks can't handle that, like, in their mind, they're always thinking, okay, Odell's on my left. I know he's got a 7-yard blaze out here. Maybe I need to get him the ball. Maybe I need to say screw it and just kind of throw him the ball. You know, like that little stuff can creep into your head as a quarterback. Like, man, I haven't gotten Odell the football the last three drives. I got to throw it to him no matter what here. Well, you throw it to him no matter what, and it's not the right read. Or you get to the line of scrimmage and you say, no, forget it, man. I don't need to think about this. I don't need to worry about it. I just need to trust the read. And then all of a sudden, it's fourth down against the Rams in 2019 or whoever. It was fourth down somewhere. They got crossed up and the middle of the, I don't know, but Odell's running naked down the left sideline, didn't even look at him. So, like, my point is Baker okay with knowing he has a really, really gravitational wide receiver and not worrying about that and just playing? So that's the internal discussion. Like, can he handle having that guy? Because some guys can, some guys can't, and be okay. Or is he just a guy who needs players that can fill specific roles and be timing-based and be where he needs them to and never have to worry about a guy in his ear saying, hey, man, got to get the rock, man. Or, hey, we got to get 13 the ball here somehow. I don't know. Again, I'm not on the coach's headset. I'm not in the meetings. I don't know any of this stuff. But I do know that it's real. And I know that stuff can be real in terms of having a really good football player and not getting them the ball when they need to get the ball, or trying to force them the ball in the wrong situations and it gets picked off or a ball gets tipped. And it just is it's a cluster F. Like, for every Stephon Diggs, Josh Allen pairing that just works in perfect harmony, there are others like Baker and Odell where you look at it and you're like, man, on paper, everything makes sense, but it doesn't add up on the football field. And that's not anyone's fault sometimes. Like, it just is what it is. So, yeah, I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at.
We kind of talked about that. You said it much better than I did, but we talked about the Randy Moss effect, the feeling like you have to look at him, every player, be aware of where he's at constantly. I guess my hope was also that with Baker really, really being a different player, I mean, he was undeniably a top 10 quarterback the last 8 games. Undeniably. hopefully that gives him the feeling of big enough cojones to where he's running the offense. Now, I think there's a lot of pressure when you know that the other guy's the star player, kind of like what you were saying. Like, you just feel that pressure. Like, you know, you're not the guy, that guy's the guy, and it's my job to get that guy the ball. Hopefully that goes away. I think if that goes away, then that we're dealing with a different offense. We're dealing with a different beast. But I
there's a little bit too with Odell swallowing your pride here and said, "Hey man, these guys went to the divisional round without me."
Yeah.
You know, like, I need to fit in. Like, you know, the famous, I need to fit in and stop worrying about fitting out. Like, I just need to fit in. Like, if I just fit in and do my role, obviously we know Odell's hyper-talented. If he just does exactly what he's supposed to do and goes where he's supposed to go and hits the landmarks he's supposed to hit, he's better than anybody in that wide receiver room by a wide margin. He can be an absolutely effective player for them still. So is there a little bit of that Odell came to Cleveland and he's bigger than life and, like, I shouldn't be here, man. These guys can't win. This is a shitty situation. Baker sucks. Well, hold on, man. You know, I know the injury sucked, but you did watch these guys then take off, and you did watch Baker get better, and you did watch this team almost beat the Chiefs in the divisional round. And it's like, okay, they did that without me. So is his mindset going into this, okay, now they got me, let's go, like, we got it, let's roll? Or is it like, still, that's the Browns and I'm Odell? Like, that's the thing too. Like, there's some of that stuff that hopefully they can kind of all get on the same page about.
I agree. So I want to cover one more topic before we end the show. Are you aware that Josh Gordon is reuniting with Johnny Manziel for the Fan Control Football League?
I did hear about that, man. It's I don't know. I feel bad. I don't like making fun of anyone, even Johnny. Like, I'm not, you know, Johnny's. I'm not saying you are. I'm not saying you are. I'm not riding the high horse. I'm just like, everybody's had down times in their life, man, and like, things haven't gone their way or they made a mistake, and I hope they're happy. I hope Johnny finds some happiness. I hope Josh is healthy and his family's right, and good for him that he's finding a way to make some money. Good for him. It's weird. It's full circle, but like, I hope he's okay. I hope they're all okay, man. Find happiness. This life is short, bro.
I was being a dick. I was gonna bring up the bait. I was being a dick there. But have you watched any of them yet? Any of the Fan Control Football stuff?
I saw Johnny was like 1 for 7 and had like a 20-yard touchdown run. I have not watched anything
else. That's not fair. Donovan and I talked about this. That's not fair because it's arena football style, right? It's seven on seven. If Josh Gordon actually, I think is his intro will be next week. But what happened was Johnny Manziel was just ripping runs off. So he had like, I don't know, 88 rushing yards in arena football game and a touchdown. And the game is designed to where you have to play both quarterbacks. So he only played like 2 quarters. So I don't, ESPN shared that stat, but that wasn't really fair because he kind of did what he was supposed to do.
He's already got hurt now.
So I mean, I don't know.
He did. He got smacked around pretty good because he was running around. But
Well, if you follow Johnny on Instagram, you would know that he is not really taking his league that serious. Like, he's just playing for fun.
I don't think Johnny takes much in his life. He's just having fun, man.
But like you said, he is having fun. Now, Gordon's a little different. I don't know if Gordon thinks, you know, Gordon still
he'll play this week. We'll see if he does this week.
There's no way Johnny's going to play in any league bigger than this probably ever. But Josh, maybe, if he could lay off.
I don't know.
Lay off the wee.
Damon Sheehy Giuseppe was also on that league. So there's 3 former Browns on that one team. Yeah, it's pretty wild. He didn't get any relevant plays. But anyways, I'm sorry. I just wanted to throw that in there to be a dick. But let's talk about Baker Mayfield, man. We kind of already talked about him a little bit. But do you think that the Browns should give him the heavy money and move on? Because there's some debate on Twitter. A lot of people think that they should hold out, see what happens.
Yeah.
Like, there's still a chance he's going to be a bust. I disagree. I think he's a star. I'm ready to go. I'm all in.
Look, I've been through peaks and valleys with this whole thing. I was on Baker before I saw anybody else on Baker at Oklahoma in his early junior year. I was like, I don't know why this guy isn't the first pick. And people kind of caught on, and I'm not trying to be like the I found Baker Mayfield nonsense. No. I'm just saying, like, I was in on Baker really early, like, in terms of – but no, that's not how it is. Everybody finds him at their own pace. But I just thought it was really weird when I was, like, watching film on him. I'm like, man, this guy's really good. Why is no one talking about him? And then everybody eventually talked about him. And you go through the cycles, and I was very high on Baker after his rookie year. And then And then all of a sudden, this quarterback in his second year shows up, and it's like all of the pre-draft flaws were there, like all of the issues and bailing pockets when he didn't feel comfortable. And like, you look back on it, and I understand it. I certainly understand what he was uncomfortable with Chris Hubbard and Greg Robinson and some of the things going on around him. He needs a strong offensive line. Some guys need really great wide receivers. Some guys need different things to be successful, and he needs a good offensive line. He just does. He's a shorter guy, and he does not overly athletic. He can't Russell Wilson his way around and make a bunch of plays like that. But look, I think for what they want to do, for what their offensive structure is, I hate to have a lame answer here, but I understand both angles. Like, I trust them on this. They know so much stuff about how Baker got better, why, that if they pull the trigger early here and say, hey, man, we believe in you, we think that this is going to work long term, it's totally justifiable. You look at the last two-thirds and you're like, okay, these guys didn't get a preseason together. These guys didn't get a ton of time. They took the first third of the season. They got on the same page. It all worked out. They see this guy, where he's going, where he's taking him. And they definitely put a lot of weight on his shoulders the last half of the year. Like, it's undeniable that I think that the discussions in the front office, and it's well noted that Barry and Stefanski and all these guys would get together with DePodesta and talk about game plan. Like, I think they were like, hey, man, we're playing some really good run defenses. We got to put this thing on Baker's shoulders. And it also gives us a chance to like, see, is Baker the guy? Like, it gives us a chance to really audition him here. Because if Baker really had a really bad year collectively, there would probably be some draft discussions going on.
Oh, yeah.
They'd be picking like 12th or 13th, and they'd be talking about drafting somebody like Trey Lance. Like, they would be doing that. But I think what he did is showed them, hey, man, you give me a really sound structure. You give me a good group of players around me, and I can really do some things for you, and I can really make plays happen. And I want him to be consistent in terms of putting a full season together. So if they extend him now, totally get it. The cap is weird, though, so maybe they don't quite feel comfortable not extending him right now, when they could look at get a better clear picture after 2021, when the cap was probably going to go back to normal following 2021, because you'll probably have more fans in the stands. It'll be a more realistic experience. The TV money is set to go crazier than normal. So they could say, okay, there's two ways to look at this. You could say, hey, Bake, we want to get this done now before the cap goes crazy and you have a great year. And you're like, okay, now I want top five quarterback money in the league. Mm-hmm. Or they could say, hey, man, we need to be patient here because we want to see it all work together. The unfortunate thing is they didn't do what a lot of teams do with these young quarterbacks, which is they gave them the right head coach right away, right? Like, they were rushed into this thing. Now, so the first year he wasted with Hugh into Freddie, he wasted year two with Freddie. Now he's on year three, and they're like, okay, we got to make a decision on his fifth year, basically only getting a 16-game sample size, which it's tough, right? Because you only get 16 games together. You don't even get camp together like normal, and it all adds up. So, like, I don't know. It's a condensed timeline to make a really important decision. If they make the decision, I think it's really easy to understand why they made the decision, because he put a lot of great things on tape this year. And the good thing about what he put on tape this year, and I'm writing about it soon, is it wasn't the unsustainable things. You know, there's a lot of fluctuation, guys, and stats year to year of guys who get out and scramble. And because when scramble drill, there's a lot of variance, a lot of randomness that takes place. Guys getting out of the pocket, making plays on the run because a guy makes a break at the right time to get on scramble drill, or he makes a break on a route. What you want to see is stability stats that are good. How good is a quarterback throwing in rhythm? How good is a quarterback throwing against blitz? How good is a quarterback throwing from the pocket, or working from his first read to his second read without leaving the pocket? Like, those are the stats that you want to see, are the ones that translate to consistent success. And like I said, it's rhythm throwing, it's being on time, it's being accurate, and I think that Baker's numbers this year were super, super encouraging. So I understand if they want to extend him, but I also understand the flip side, which is, hey, man, maybe we want to see where the cap's going. Maybe we want to see you put it together over another 16-game sample size, and we're okay with swallowing the loss of, like, hey, man, maybe we should have signed Baker last year, because here's what we won't care about, okay? Play a hypothetical game with me. They don't sign. They pick up the fifth year. They pick up the fifth year. They go into next year, and he lights it up. He goes for 40 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. Great outcome. Awesome. And we're like, man, they should have signed this guy. Shut up. You won't be saying that, because Baker will be so damn good and you'll have so much belief in him that it doesn't matter what they pay him. So it really won't. It really won't.
That's
so
fair.
At the end of the day, you want them to get as much evidence as they need. If they don't feel like they have enough evidence right now, fine, run it again another year. And if he's really, really good, then you're going to be like, I don't really care because they have an awesome quarterback for the next 10 years. And if he's not good and he's bad, then you also still have the ability to get out of it if you need to get out of it without tying yourself to somebody for a long time. I think he's good. I think he's going to be good. Is he going to be elite? I don't know, but he's really good. And I think you can win a Super Bowl with Baker Mayfield, and that's what matters. So, yeah, I hope they make it work. This year or next year, I hope they make it work.
You know, and quarterbacks, they're such a weird position, too, because they know the value of themselves and the value of their weapons, and they make so much extra money due to endorsements and stuff. We don't know what kind of – obviously, you know, using the term hometown discount is probably not valid for a guy as young as Baker. But we don't know what – you know, maybe he does explode, and he still only wants top 10 money instead of Patrick Mahomes' top 5 money. Do you know what I mean? There's just a lot of factors there to consider. I don't know if you're aware of this. We talked about this on the podcast a couple weeks ago. This is a couple weeks ago. Jeff Schwartz, the old officer, Mitchell Schwartz's brother, he has his own pod. He was on VEASAN's podcast, and he said that he would be willing to bet that the Browns are going to be in the similar situation as the Eagles and the Rams because you can't pay average quarterbacks. And he said definitively Carson Wentz was better than Baker Mayfield. I took great offense to that. I was incredibly upset. But it doesn't sound like you're worried about that at all.
Do you mean right now or like just like his
high? He said in a couple years the Browns are going to be in the exact same situation. They were talking about the Jared Goff trade is what they were talking about and how the Eagles are trying. This was before Carson Wentz trade. And he goes, mark my words, the Browns will be in the same position in a couple of years because they're going to pay a very average quarterback. They're going to be sitting there in cap hell, and they're going to be looking for a way out. And I was blown away by that. I was blown away that some people still view Baker Mayfield that lowly.
Donovan, do you want to add anything? I
mean, you know, I like Jared. I mean, Baker's better than Jared. I think Carson's high was higher than Baker and Jared's high. But Baker's better overall than all of them. Jared didn't really have any lows. Like his lows were not as bad as Carson Wentz's. Baker Mayfield. He never threw like 4 picks in a game. He would just throw he would throw no picks and no touchdowns. Like Jared Goff doesn't mess up games, but he doesn't really win you games. Carson's in the best situation he could possibly be in. I know I trashed on Carson Wentz last year, but
you did. You hate it. You bet against him every week.
Yeah, I did, but he was horrible. But he's in the best situation of his life, really, like since, you know, the year he had in Philly when he was good. Baker's in the best situation of his life. Jared, not so much, but he already had – I mean, he went to the Super Bowl like a few years ago, so that was probably the best spot for him. But, I mean, I think Baker is a – you know how much I like Baker. I was kind of with Jake here. I've been following – I do high school football, Jake, if you didn't know that. So been following that kid for a long time, dude. Since high school, he's a legend in Texas. Got under recruit, obviously. You know, the Cliff Kingsbury, you know, Texas Tech, making fun of Josh there, saying I love Cliff so much. But
one of the many quarterbacks he couldn't win with at Texas Tech.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. Hey, well, he got, you know, Davis Webb and Mahomes instead, I guess, to replace that.
Still Baker, couldn't win with them.
Yeah, that's true. That's
you have
true,
to stop people, too. That's the thing. But
yeah,
no, listen.
But no, I mean, I was going to say, I think. I don't agree with that quote, but Baker is not. I wouldn't pay him top dollar yet. I would wait a year. Like,
no, I understand.
I don't think he gets elite money yet, but like, I get where Jeff is coming from. I think Jeff he was a good football player. He's carved a niche out of making statements that. Listen, if a majority of what you say pisses people off, I think that you got to slow down and say, okay, am I the problem here or?
No, that's fair.
Bro, like, go do your thing, man. He's making money doing this career. He's a lineman, which is a very rare thing for linemen to get out and make your money. And, like, cool. Like, he knows more about football than I'll probably ever – he'd probably forget more than I'll ever know, like, for the most part. He's been around great people, and I just think that he gets really over the top with some of these takes. And, like, it's good for his brand because it's got people like you and I talking about it.
Yeah.
I think that, listen, when I look at Carson Wentz, I see a guy who had a really nice year, but that year, if you look at it and go back and track his next 2 years after that year, the randomness of that year that he had, a lot of those stats were the unsustainable scramble mode type of plays that if you go back and track his on target percentages and things of that nature, he kept getting worse. It kept trending in the wrong direction. And that's a guy who had really good weapons early in his career in Philly. And you can't debate the line play around him was really good too. They've had elite line play around him, and the stats kept getting worse. While if you look at Baker and you say, okay, Baker's been pretty good every year dating back to college except for one. And then we see this guy the last half of this year who was really, really good. So, like, okay, is that one year that he was with Freddie Kitchens, who I think we've all been able to step back and say, like, go get your money, Freddie. You did a great job. You fooled a lot of people. So, like, when I hear stories of Freddie at the Senior Bowl after he got hired, just, like, laying out a bar, I was like, man, this probably was not a great decision. So, like, listen, I don't think there's any debating that the 2019 Browns were an abject disaster from communication to everything involved. Like, they just were a disaster. So if you take that year out of Baker's last 5 years, you got a guy who seems to continually keep getting better. So that to me is the difference. He's got a guy who's trending up. So like with Baker, if Baker was a 6'3", 215 quarterback who didn't have a swaggy confidence about him, guys like Jeff Schwartz wouldn't care. They would probably be in on Baker, but they don't like the bravado so much. And like, they just kind of want to keep squashing him and squashing him. And it's like,
yeah,
I get it. His personality's not for you, but if you remove Baker and you just say quarterback A, 6'3", 215 pounds, these stats and what they've done, you probably would say, yeah, that'd be a good extension for that guy. So I don't think, let me put it this way. I think there's a world in which a bad extension can happen. Where things turn and go a bad direction that maybe nobody's really expecting. But I don't think the Browns are going to regret it if they sign him. I think he's going to give them quality quarterback play. Is he going to give them elite quarterback play, like really elite quarterback play, and have a year like he had at Oklahoma where he throws 40 and under 10 interceptions? Maybe not. But is that is 30 to 35 touchdowns? It's like is the 28 to 35 touchdown range with 8 to 12, 13, 14 interceptions good enough to win a ton of games in the NFL if you have good talent around you? Hell yeah, it is, man. So I just don't think they're going to be in that whole, like, regretting situation. Like, I guess if you did that scenario 10 times, maybe one time it ends up Baker just taking a plummet. But I think he's got too many sharp minds around him now, too many good players around him up front in the positions. He needs to be really good to have him just be like a quarterback contract that just falls off in a couple of years. I would be really surprised if that was the outcome.
Yeah.
Going on, I'm sorry.
I was going to say that I the only thing I do like about that statement was Goff and Wentz kind of got traded for two different reasons. Goff never got better. Wentz got hurt all the time and regressed. Mm-hmm. Like, Goff is the same quarterback he was when he came out of Cal. Like, Baker is different because, like Jake said, and like you've said before plenty of times, Josh and myself and everybody, is like, Baker's gotten better besides that 1 year. He hasn't had any stability. That's the thing with Goff. Like, you've had McVay and, like, these weapons, and, like, you haven't gotten better, man. Like, Wentz. And
that's too, like, Wentz had Peterson.
Yeah, Wentz has had the same.
I don't think people understand what Baker came into, bro. Like, he came into – they were 0-16. They were historically inept, and they kept Hugh – they historically kept inept. Hugh Jackson. Yeah. They kept him, and he was a lame duck, and Hugh knew it. Everyone knew it. And then it all went wrong. They lost close games again that they continued to lose. They bring in Freddie Kitchens, who – listen, Freddie had called a couple great games where some things came together, and they kept him on, like – he's had no consistency, and he came in.
Even with Stefanski, a lot of people didn't like that hire. I mean,
it's rare. You're right, bro. You're absolutely right. Like, I just don't think people understand when you get picked first how many things are working against you sometimes. Mm-hmm. The Rams figured it out. They got Sean McVay, and it was a home run, and it was the right pairing from the right go. And you're right. He never got better. You eventually want to see your quarterback be able to handle more shit, and he couldn't handle it. You can't do it. He didn't get better, and they said, we need to upgrade. You look at these guys who get taken first overall, and you look at what they've done for them. What Baker had to deal with is so bad, and I don't think people talk about it enough.
No,
he didn't get Hugh Jackson fired. Hugh Jackson got himself fired.
Yeah,
he didn't get Freddie Kitchens fired. Freddie was inept. He could not be a head coach. He could not handle everything that came with it. He's finally got somebody with a competent head on his shoulders, and look what kind of season he was finally able to put together. Like, I don't think people understand how much he had to overcome. That's one thing when you talk about Baker that people continue to forget. Well, he didn't win. Bro, they won one game in 32 games before he came to Cleveland, and he took them in his third year to the brink of beating the Chiefs in the playoffs. Like, it's so crazy to me. It's so crazy. So I think that there's a level to that. People just underestimate situations all the time. You know, like if a player gets put in this situation versus that situation can make an entire career. How many quarterbacks would have been able to be selected first, deal with what he dealt with, and come out on the other side? Like, I don't know. Maybe Josh Allen could have done it. I don't know. Sam Darnold clearly couldn't do it. Lamar Jackson, are you telling me Hugh Jackson's going to build the right offense around Lamar with Greg Roman and all the pieces that Baltimore's put around him and the great defense initially? I just think it's crazy, man. Like, they just underestimate that stuff. So, Matt, like, major shout out to Baker for overcoming that and even giving himself a chance. Like, the quarterback ineptitude in Cleveland is not legendary for no reason. It is real. Like, they have dealt with it. It's a stigma. The stadium could feel it. You can always go to that stadium and, like, know, you know, man, I tell this story all the time about I went to a game. I don't go to many games because I just like watching it from a better perspective. But they're playing, like, 2016, playing Baltimore. They jumped out 20-0, and the PAT got blocked. They're up 20-0. PAT gets blocked and returns 20-2, and the whole stadium knew they're going to lose. They lost. The whole stadium knew. It was 20-2, and the whole stadium knew they're going to lose. Like, you can feel that stadium. The fans are like, they know. It's a Murphy's Law stadium, man. Like, the people
don't see it. It's a Murphy's Law.
Like, they've seen it for so long, they know it's coming. And, like, the nervousness around Baker's first throw, if you go back and watch that Monday Night Football game, I have a fun thing for you. Go back and listen. Like, NFL Game Pass is really cool where you can re-plug in the TV broadcast and put good headphones on and just listen to everything. Like, I like to go back and listen to the TV view so I can hear, like, line adjustments and shit. And this year was a ton of fun because you could hear everything. Like, there's no fans. So you could hear everything. But that first game, the Sunday night football game, hell, it was a Thursday night game. I can't remember at this point. Go back and listen to how quiet the crowd got before Baker's first. It's really fun to listen to. It's 70,000 people in the stadium, and it gets so quiet right as he rips the first throw that gets caught. It's really unique to go back and listen to it. So, like, if you're, you know, anyone who's listening to this, like, go back and listen to it. It's really unique. Like, the pressure that is on Baker Mayfield being the first quarterback selected number one overall since Tim Couch's failure is so heavy. And for him to be able to overcome it and get to this point he's at now, like, that's an even bigger reason to feel great about Baker overall. Sorry, I rambled. But, like,
you nailed it. And that's by far the most frustrating part about watching football is that, you know, you remember Tim Couch. You remember Derek Carr. You remember David Carr. You know, you remember these guys that were like, that guy was good. There was nothing around him. There was nothing around him. You know what I mean? His number one wide receiver for 3 years was Kevin Johnson. That's an issue. You know what I mean? Like, you remember those guys getting hurt and sacked constantly. You remember David Carr's best offensive lineman being Tony Buscelli, who was 40 years old at the time. You know what I mean? Kajana Carter, guys that got hurt. The situation is so important in the NFL. It's just so important. And people don't realize that. And for as much credit as you give Tim Couch for, oh, well, this situation sucked, we need to give that same credit to Baker Mayfield for being in a similar situation and coming out of it someone like Roses, because that's rare. That's rare. I mean, you could go back and look at guys like Troy Aikman, where, you know, they drafted him and they did everything they could to stack around Michael Irvin, Emma Smith, Nate Newton. You know, same thing with Peyton Manning. Baker Mayfield hasn't hit that yet, and he's still looking like a good player. And it's just it's situation is everything. You nailed it. Not enough credit is given to him because of that.
I mean, you go back and look at all these guys, man. Like, these first picks the quarterbacks that were taken, like, with the burden of being selected first. I mean, the jury's still out on Kyler, but I think Kyler's going to be pretty good. But he came in with the guy with the best structure of offense for him. You know, like, I don't think there's any doubt about the structure of Kyler and Kingsbury working out. But, like, Jared Goff, we've seen that the pressure of – he came into an ideal situation. The pressure of that was too much for him. Andrew Luck, I think Andrew was transcendent in and of himself, but he came to a team that the year before – Peyton Manning gets hurt, whose roster was ready to compete in a stable franchise. You know, Cam Newton, Ron Rivera tied together. Sam Bradford injuries. It's like you go down the line and, like, there's some of these guys that are able to come. Like, Matthew Stafford's a great example of a guy that was just kind of like – he kind of just – just good enough, man. Keep, you know, keep plugging away. There's so many Jamarcus Russell examples out there of like these guys that just can't handle it, and the first pick is too much for them. So I couldn't give more credit to Baker for overcoming what was. If you go back and look at the last 20 years of first pick quarterbacks taken, it's as challenging a situation to arrive in as anybody. It might even Absolutely. Be the worst. It might. You're coming in with a coach who was 1-32 and who was forced to hire an offensive coordinator, who had no control over anything, who was a lame duck from the second he was kept on, just because they'd fired Rod Jedzinski before him after a year. Mike Pettine, and then Jedzinski before, they felt the pressure to keep a guy for another year. Like, it was an unbelievable thing to deal with early, and then just blowing the whole second coaching hire of his career, just completely messing that up. Yeah, it is bad. It was bad. And I think it might be the worst one we've seen since the Browns have arrived back in the league. Maybe 10 years. I don't know. David Carr's probably, you could argue David Carr for sure. But like, a non-expansion quarterback first taken overall.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It's situation is everything, and you know, nothing accentuates that fact more than the quarterback position. Hey, Jake, we appreciate you coming on, man. This was a blast. Again, this is Jake Burns from the OBR. Do you got anything you want to pitch or plug?
No, man. Check us out, the OBR. We got a great deal going on right now for membership that includes some great offers for TV subscriptions tied to it, which is a really cool thing, 50% off. So check us out. You know, film coverage all year round, draft coverage all year round, Rumors Central and guys that are connected to Berea that do a great job collecting some inside info for us too. So we'd appreciate any support, and check out our YouTube channel as well, which is just the OBR Film Breakdown YouTube channel. So thanks, Josh, Donovan, for having me on, man. Guys, I'm a big fan of yours, and you're doing great stuff, so keep it up.
Thank you.
Donovan, you got anything you want to plug? Tell them where to follow you.
Yeah, just follow me on Twitter at Don James Sports. Name remains the same. I just put out my top 15 quarterbacks for the NFL draft. I
saw that.
Shout out to Shane Alexander, Mark Gunnels, all those guys for reposting them. Big wigs, you know, posting my stuff makes me feel a little bit better because I've been out of the game for a while. Took like a year off, but thanks to Josh, thanks to Jay. I'll definitely be checking out some OBR stuff. I just followed you, Jake, on Twitter the other day, so I'll be checking some stuff out and kind of getting up to the I want to do running backs, I think, on Studio and Sports Friday. So Friday around noon-ish Eastern time, I'll have the top 20, or around 15 or 20. I got to go through my running backs a little bit better. But probably 20. I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. And this was the Browns Wire Podcast. Be sure to tune in next week when Donovan and I draft our all-time favorite Cleveland Browns offense. You're gonna vote against who's got the best one. You can follow my stuff on the Browns Wire, and we are out. All right, thanks a lot.